Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and with me today is Ryan Salva.
Hey, dude.
Hey, Ryan.
How's it going?
Good.
Excellent.
Ryan's
excellent.
A program manager on the Windows Client Tools team.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're here today to talk about the just released CTP2 of our Cordova extension for the building of multi-device hybrid apps.
Yeah, we're still working on that name.
So I got that all right.
Yep, absolutely.
And basically what that is it's cross-platform development for folks doing HTML and JavaScript.
Totally.
We've talked quite a bit about the Xamarin tooling and how you do cross-platform applications with C# and XAML.
Yep.
The other side of that, of course, is HTML and JavaScript, and that's basically what the Cordova tooling is for.
Yeah, and let's be clear about what we mean by cross-platform. What that really means here is iOS, Android, Windows, and then if you're particularly ambitious or have a particularly diverse audience, maybe even further down the line in terms of market adoption for things like BlackBerry as well.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. And so with our cross-platform tools, you know, using the Cordova platform and open source Apache Foundation kind of project, you can develop for anything from iOS 4 Plus, Android 2.3 Plus, really anything that has 5% or more market adoption. And kind of like with our kind of recent kind of entree into the Cordova project, we've really been working to kind of bring forward adoption for Windows 8 and 8.1 on phone and on store, and even soon to be with universal projects as well. That's not out yet. That'll be part of the Cordova 3.6 release. We've actually just released 3.5.1 with the kind of Cordova team, and we're looking at pushing 3.6 out in the very near future here. And it's important to say that like that 3.6, as part of an open source project, really it's kind of Microsoft and Microsoft Open Tech that's doing a lot of the driving for that.
Cool.
You know, so we're really actively engaged with all of the members of the project, everyone from Adobe to Google, Microsoft, and the folks at BlackBerry, Intel. It's a really, really inclusive community that is kind of fundamentally premised on breaking down the barriers between these kind of walled gardens that we have between iOS and Android and Windows, so the developers like don't have to develop three or four different applications just to deliver the same user experience, you know, minus some UX tweaks, but like the same basic functionality to people based upon the brand of device that they've got in their pocket.
So one of the ways Xamarin approaches that is they essentially build an API layer that sits on top of the iOS SDK and the Android SDK. So you write C# code, and then you have access to everything in the APIs on those other, on all of the platforms. So they kind of abstract a way out. Is a similar approach going on here?
So I would say similar. The end goals are the same, but the way that we get there is a little bit different.
Okay.
So in a Xamarin type of project, it's really kind of, it is a benefit, at least for some business cases, that you essentially end up developing still three different applications, but with a significant amount of shared code underneath, right? So the idea with a Xamarin project being that you can deliver an experience that feels like a native, and in fact is a native device experience for each one of the platforms.
Right.
With a Cordova project, the approach is a little bit different. It really should be close to 100% shared code no matter what your deployment target is, whether it is iOS, Windows, or Android.
Okay.
So effectively what it's delivering is a web application. So it's pretty much always 100% CSS, JavaScript, HTML. That is delivered inside of a web view. And that web view is itself packaged inside of kind of a native application that Cordova does the building of, right?
Okay.
Because it's a web view and it is HTML, CSS, JavaScript are kind of the great equalizer as far as technologies go, that means that you can share all of your logic, all of your views, all of your UI.
All of your UI, right.
Across
That's
all
the
of
benefit.
Them. Right. And what that does mean is that you do not necessarily get a native experience, like the buttons are not going to look like iOS buttons, or they're not going to look like Windows buttons. But you do get a consistent brand experience across all of them. Mm-hmm. You know, Lord knows there are some kind of performance kind of drawbacks that you incur. Not only are you using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, which itself is super snappy and super fast, but you're not going to be able to make the kind of the fine-tune optimizations okay. that you can with complete native control. But it's also within a web view, which itself incurs a little bit of an overhead.
And what about access to things on the device like the camera and the accelerometer and stuff like that?
So all of that is negotiated through these things called Cordova plugins.
Okay.
Plugins are themselves separate from the Cordova project, like part of the basic platform, and therefore released at a different cadence than the Cordova platform itself. The Cordova platform itself is really for building to your basic application to each of the different operating systems okay. and ecosystems. The plugins, on the other hand, what they do is they provide access to the native device capabilities. And so a application author, someone like me or you, would use a common JavaScript API, and they're all luckily super well documented, at least particularly the common ones, for access to camera, geolocation, okay. file system. You know, there's about 20 or so odd of those ones that just about every application uses in one right. way or another. For a plugin developer, what they do is they build an implementation each for iOS, Android, and Windows in the native language for that platform. So for example, Objective-C for an iOS okay. device, right? And then they will translate that to that common JavaScript API that developers can use. And so through that, you have access to all of the same capabilities that you would get if you wrote a native application, but quite frankly, like for a lot less effort. Right. Like the actual coding time that you've got to invest, because it's a nice, plain, simple JavaScript API, and because it is common across all three different platforms, not having to rewrite it saves a lot of time.
Right. Who provides the plugins?
Who provides the plugins? So it is a diverse set of individuals, okay. right? So a lot of the kind of core members for the Cordova platform are the same contributors to plugins. Okay. Look at that. We have a picture of my dog up on the screen.
Excellent.
Say hello to Cortez, everybody. So a lot of those developers who are contributing to the core platform, those are the exact same developers okay. who are contributing mm-hmm. to many of the common plugins. Having said that, there are a wealth of what are often called custom plugins
right.
that are developed by enterprises and individuals who have special needs that go above and beyond what many people think of as the core plugins.
Okay.
So let me give an example of that. You gave the example before of a camera plugin, right? So camera plugin, everyone needs access to the camera, but there's a lot more things that you can do with a camera than just snapping pictures.
Right.
What if, as a business, you wanted to have a barcode scanner? Right, that uses the camera, mm-hmm. but on top of the camera, it does some extra special interpretation as well. So that's kind of where you enter into the realm of a custom plugin. Not everyone needs a barcode scanner, but it's a common enough practice that someone, some enterprising individual out there, or enterprise, has recognized that need, created their own plugin that builds upon the native device capabilities okay. of the camera, and then gives you easy JavaScript API access to use the device as a barcode scanner rather than just a plain old ordinary camera. So a lot of folks publish those custom plugins on plugins.cordova.io.
Okay.
There's also an Adobe repository for it called Plugman. And then a lot of businesses just kind of choose to keep their own
right.
plugins, you know, in-house because they've made a significant investment to develop those and they continue to use it for their own special business needs. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
All right. So before the Visual Studio extension, what were people doing to build these apps?
That's an excellent question. This is another one where there are many roads to the same destination. So there are a lot of tools that are already kind of out there in the marketplace. that kind of build on top of the Cordova platform. Mm-hmm. So you've got Telerik App Builder is a great one that's a Visual Studio extension, right. And already provides, you know, a really great and rich set of tools for a Cordova developer who wants to stay kind of inside of the Visual Studio IDE. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of developers out there who are outside of kind of the Microsoft stack and are using a combination of Sublime Text with Node and Git installed, and they've got kind of their, you know, dozen different small, very specialized tools that they use to kind of chain together a workflow. And that's typically kind of a command line based experience that really kind of depends heavily upon assembling a wide variety of highly specialized tools. You know, we believe that while that is a totally productive workflow for some businesses, there are a number of scenarios and there are a number of efficiencies and productivity gains that you can get through an integrated development environment that kind of brings everything together in one place. And I'll be honest with you, so I've actually tried to build my own development environment kind of the Sublime Text way a couple of times now. It takes a lot of time.
Right.
It's not a fast process to identify all the tools that you need, all the right versions of those tools, all of the right configurations for those versions, and then to install them. And then God help you if there's ever an update to one of those tools in the chain. Because, well, hey, if you want to take that again, I just spent 2 days setting up a dev environment. Now there's an update, and that update to one of those links of the chain invalidates another one of the links in the chain. It's totally doable, and lots of developers who really kind of make a career out of this stay on top of it and are able to kind of keep up with all the updates. But there's some work involved in kind of trying to maintain that. And so, you know, what we really did is after going out there and talking to a lot of businesses and a lot of enterprises that were trying to make this workflow work for them, what we did is we said, well, hey, if you're losing days of your time, of your work week, to actually just setting up and getting a healthy, well-configured development environment, how can we take that work out of it? And so we've got a team, kind of within my team actually, who their sole job is to go out there, it's to scout for all of the different tool chain dependencies, figure out what versions work well together, which ones play nicely together, because not all these links in the tool chain, it's not necessarily in their interest to play nicely together. Okay. They've got to innovate at their own pace, and they've each got their own business models. And so what we do is we go out there and we scout ahead to see what versions of the Android SDK play nicely with which versions of Java, play nicely with which versions of Node, play nicely with which versions of iTunes. iTunes is really only necessary for the deployment step there.
Right.
But you know, we've got a team who goes out there, scouts all of those, finds out which versions play nicely together, and then we provide a nice packaged installer that you know, when you're installing our extension, says, hey, what do you need the full dependency tool chain? Okay, great. We'll go out and we'll get that for you. We'll download those. We'll install them for you. We'll configure them for you. And then if and when there's ever an update in the tool chain, hey, we'll let you know about that. And we'll help you take that dependency, get a new one installed and kind of configured properly so that you don't have to be constantly looking out there for updates. You also don't have to take the updates if you don't want them. Like, it for many people, once they've got that nice, settled environment, they want to stick there. I totally get that. Like, change brings risk, right? So if you don't want to take it, we'll let you know that it's available, but it's up to you whether or not you want to take it. I think that that's a place where we can take a two-day process and take it down to, I think, the data that I've seen is right now our install for that long tool chain of about 12 different pieces, you know, takes somewhere between 20 minutes and an hour, depending upon your connection speed and that kind of stuff.
Right? Cool.
But yeah,
let's see
what it's about. Okay. Bye bye, Cortez. All right. Everyone look away while I enter my password. Okay, great. Everyone should see here that clearly I've got a little Apple that's there on the front of my my machine here today. I'm running, excuse me, I'm running Parallels on my machine. I found that for doing multi-device hybrid application development, Cordova tooling, right?
Yep.
It's actually kind of helpful, particularly in situations like that, where I, like this, where I need to demo the product, to have it all on one machine.
Right.
And so here, I can just pretty easily switch in between my iOS, my Mac environment, and my Windows environment. And so I'm just going to start here, doing File New. Oopsie. File New. Project. And here, underneath JavaScript, so I've already done the work of installing the extension.
Okay.
And underneath the JavaScript node here, you'll see that there's an option here for multi-device hybrid apps. There's also one under TypeScript. Today, I'm just going to do like super stripped down examples, so we're going to use JavaScript.
Cool.
All right. Oh, okay. So here's a great opportunity to talk about some of the change that we are driving into the Cordova platform. It is a constraint of the Cordova platform, because they're typically working in kind of a Mac or Linux kind of based environment, that I don't know why, but they don't allow spaces and their file paths. So you'll see here that because Visual Studio contains a space in it, it has given me a warning that it cannot create that project. So this is a bug fix that we are actually driving into the Cordova project with 3.6, which, like I said, should be coming out in the very near future. And so until then, while we're here in this kind of alpha beta release of Cordova tooling, you cannot have a project name that contains a space in it. Totally lame, totally weird. But hey, that's how it is. All right, so we're just going to go ahead and change our name. We're going to put this into a new location. Let's see here. We'll just put it onto our desktop. That's a good enough place. Select folder. And say OK. All right, cool. So as soon as you kind of get up and running here, I will kind of remove some of the line breaks here so we can see what's going on. We've got a nice just little welcome screen that gives you a pointer to some helpful things that might help you get started. Mm-hmm. A lot of the developers who kind of approach us and approach our tooling have wanted to do multi-device development for a long time and cross-platform development for a long time, but haven't really been able to. They, you know, Visual Studio didn't have any inbox integration or tooling for it, and so this is their first time giving it a try, even though they might have read a lot of blog posts about it and had a good business reason to do it. So we really view it as our mission to not only deliver great tooling for Cordova apps, but also to deliver great documentation and a great onboarding experience for developers who are trying Cordova for the first time. And so to that end, we've got some great documentation that just got released on MSDN with the CTP 2.0 release.
Okay.
I don't know how many pages, but it's a lot. It's like 60 pages of onboarding documentation. We've also got a lot of great samples, basically like to-do apps, which are, if you've got a free lunch hour, you can grab one of our sample apps and get going quickly. We have those using Angular, using Backbone, and using WinJS, the cross-platform version of WinJS, an open-source version of WinJS that's out there as well. So this kind of start page will just kind of give you a pointer to some of that documentation out there. I'm going to kind of hide it for the time being, though, because I want to take you on a quick little tour of our project structure.
Yeah.
All right. So over here on the right-hand side, we're going to open up our Solution Explorer, pin that guy down, and there are a couple of folders in here that are pretty specific to what actually kind of like the Cordova platform project structure, and so I want to explain those. Okay, CSS, whatever. Everybody knows what CSS is, right?
Scripts.
Images, good enough. Scripts, we all know what that is. It's really this merges folder and this res folder that are the ones that I want to talk about. A good way to talk about this, let's actually start by just launching, just doing a quick little F5 to see what the base project looks like. In this particular case, I am going to launch to Ripple.
Which is
what is Ripple, you might ask? Well, let me tell you. So glad you asked. So Ripple, here we are while it's building. It is an emulator that runs inside of Chrome.
In fact, here is Chrome coming up right here.
Ripple is great for when you're doing your initial kind of layout and UI construction, right? It essentially says, I mean, the premise behind Ripple is, hey, Android uses WebKit, iOS uses WebKit, Chrome uses WebKit.
Right.
Good enough. They must all lay out pretty much the same. let's use Chrome as the rendering engine to emulate what it's like to be on, in this case, what was it, a Nexus 7, and just use Chrome's rendering engine to do that.
So could you also use one of the Android emulators like Jenny Motion?
Yeah, dude, yeah, totally.
Ridiculously slow default ones.
You could absolutely use one of the ridiculously slow default ones. And like, you've actually brought up a good reason why people use Ripple. Because the Android emulators are kind of slow.
Yeah.
I mean, like, start it up, go make a sandwich, have lunch, call your mom, come back, get going again. That is why a lot of people use Ripple for the first, I don't know, 60, 70% of their workflow. Because in terms of just making sure that the application basically works and basically lays out properly for iOS and Android devices, Ripple's a pretty good way to get a start.
It's blazingly fast.
And it's super fast. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Now, you'll notice kind of on the left and the right-hand side, there's kind of a bunch of places where you can change the device. I'll kind of open that guy. Oh, he doesn't want to open up today. There we are. Open up so you can change orientation or you can change the platform. It's got some information about that. Geolocation, let's say that I want to change. If I were using geolocation, obviously this is just a Hello World app right now. But if I wanted to change location, I could do it through there. So it provides a way of kind of mocking out or faking a subset of the plugins. Okay. It does a pretty good job for what I referred to earlier as the core or the common plugins. Once again, like camera, like geolocation. Plugin makers can also create their own mocks for their own custom plugins. Or if a mock hasn't been created for a plugin, you can often just feed it a JSON string to kind of give a return value to whatever your promise, your asynchronous call was, so that it can keep on doing its work. But one of the liabilities of the Ripple emulator is really that like when you're providing these fakes or these mocks, it's not the real device.
Right.
It is, the emulator is always going to be of higher fidelity. And so when you're actually ready to go from, you know, I'm doing basic layout and basic construction to I'm actually want to make sure that this is going to work for my customers.
Yep.
There is a time that you need to move to the emulator and you need to move on to the device to make sure that it actually behaves as expected.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Totally. Okay, so what we just did here is we did a quick little launch to Ripple. In this particular case, we kind of put it into debug mode. In fact, hey, it was debug mode.
Debug mode.
I wonder.
So you should be able to set breakpoints and things like that. Right?
Oh, yeah, baby. All right, sweet. So here we are. Right back here in Visual Studio, we've got our DOM Explorer attached up to it. In fact, I've even got a JavaScript console here. It's giving me a couple of warnings, no errors in particular, right? But like, I've actually got normal JavaScript debugging. I can I can inspect elements, I can set breakpoints, I can do all those things. And this is attached to Chrome, right?
Right.
Now, it's not just Chrome that's kind of the superstar here. We can also attach to the Android emulator. Really, we see a world in which not only will you be able to attach to the Android emulator, in fact, today, we'll do it a little bit later, you can attach to an Android device, and in the future, we see a world that you'll be able to do debugging against even iOS devices as well. Not there yet, but the future is not so distant.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, man. So I promised that I would talk a little bit about the file structure.
Yes.
It's a long way to get back to the file structure. So I'm going to go ahead and stop debugging here. And I want to talk about that merges folder. I talked earlier about using nearly 100% shared code for each one of your deployment targets. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that you're occasionally going to need to depart. You're occasionally going to want a slightly different experience. Maybe it's different CSS, maybe it's different JavaScript for each one of your deployment targets. We hope you won't need to use it often, but when you do, enter in the merges folder. The merges folder basically says, hey, whatever file, whatever directory is in the root one, replace it with this other file. So let me kind of give you an example of this. In this particular case, I'm going to, let's do a deployment to iOS this next time, all right? And for that, Our index.html file here, it normally says, hello, your application is ready.
Right.
Right? Let's say, hello, your iOS application is ready. Just make it a little bit different. So for that, I'm going to go to the iOS folder. I'm going to create a new item. In this case, a new HTML file. Over here in the root, it's called index.html. So the trick here is I want to call it the exact same thing, index.html. Say add. All right. Now within here, I'm just going to do a copy and paste of all this.
Do you see a world where you might be able to do the equivalent of pound if defs inside, so you don't have to maintain multiple copies of the same file?
You can, so not declaratively, but certainly programmatically one can. So for example, in your JavaScript file, there's no reason that you can't detect kind of platform version there. And then there are also, you know, the normal CSS hacks that you can use to kind of do that within CSS as well.
Okay.
I kind of like, there's a time and a place for those things. You know, I would probably use the merges folder for my CSS hacks, but use wherever logic kind of forks, I would probably within my JavaScript file do a platform detect there.
Okay.
So unless you are going to, like, reasons that you would want to use the merges folder, right? You want to have a significant departure in either functionality or layout, right? Maybe for some reason it's important to you that you have a an application that really does feel native, right? So maybe your markup needs to be significantly different, since a Windows device typically has horizontal scrolling, whereas an iOS device or an Android device might have something that's a little bit more commonly vertical scrolling. There are some instances where you might want to use that. Once again, the like the real benefit of a Cordova project is that you can do shared code, and so the fewer forks that you have in your logic and in your behavior, the better off you're going to be, and the kind of closer you're going to be to the most common business goals, which are get it to market fast, get it to market with as little effort as possible, and have it look good and perform well for for those tasks.
You can't do the pound if defs in XAML either, so it's kind of a general question of would that be interesting to be able to have?
Yeah, I mean, I happen to think that this is personal development style, right? Just totally personal style. I really think of HTML in that it should describe the content that it surrounds as little and as infrequently as possible. Should you use HTML as a layout language, and you should use it as a descriptive meta language to describe the content that it wraps.
Okay.
It is really personal development style. It is really up to the CSS to define the layout of a page or of a view.
Right.
And you know, it turns out that particularly with some of the kind of new properties that are coming out with CSS 3, with grid layouts and Flexbox, it's a lot easier to do layout using CSS alone than it was if you rewind the clock by 3 years even.
Yep.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so I promised that I would show kind of deploying to iOS here. So while I have got my, I'm gonna make sure I got the right index open here. I'm just gonna call it hello, your iOS application is ready. And just to make it readily apparent, maybe we'll also even go here and we'll say style, okay. All the CSS HTML developers out there, I know that you shouldn't use inline styles. This is just for, you know, just for demo purposes, red, just to make it completely clear that we're in iOS only, right? Okay, so we're gonna save that guy. At this point, well darn it, we were gonna go to iOS, so that means that we need to prep the iOS or the Mac side of our machine to accept a build.
Right.
All right, so I'm just gonna sneak on over to there. I'm going to open up my terminal and I'm going to start up my VSMDA remote. This is basically, I'm going to give it enter. All right, there it is starting up. This is a build agent. Simple little script. It's actually a node package that I installed on the Mac side here. And it's just a listener. All it's doing is listening for when Visual Studio sends a build on over,
right?
And says, hey, please build this for us. Now, one of the interesting things about Cordova is it provides that normalizing API that makes it possible to build for iOS or Android or Windows or any of the other ecosystems, mm-hmm. but it doesn't do the build itself. It still depends upon the kind of the native build systems for each one of the ecosystems right. to do the build. So for example, I have to have the Android SDK in order to build for Android. Yep. I have to have a Mac in order to build for iOS, or right. more specifically, I need to have Xcode to build for iOS.
Right.
And just the same in Windows, I have to have the Windows SDKs and the build agents that are available for that. Yep. As I think you know, with this release just a few days ago, we introduced support for Windows 7 with our multi-device hybrid app tools, which is fantastic. It
for
turns out,
iOS and Android apps.
So that's kind of the trick here, right?
Yeah.
So you know, our data indicated that about 30% of developers who tried to install were actually trying to install on a Windows 7 machine. It's like, that's great, that's awesome. We're getting like, you know, lots and lots of people are enthusiastic about building multi-device apps. Mm-hmm. But up until a few days ago, we didn't support development on Windows 7 machines. Now, you can install our tools on Windows 7 machines,
cool.
but because a Windows 7 machine does not have the Windows 8 and 8.1 build systems,
right.
you cannot yet build for Windows 8, Windows 8.1, for whether it be store apps or phone apps.
Right.
So that Windows 7 caveat, and we know it's a caveat.
But you could create a Windows 8 VM and do it. Is
totally.
That correct?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So if you wanted to, like if you had a Windows 8 VM and you could build off of there, right. I mean, you'd have to install your
tools.
You just
can't run
as well.
The phone emulator in a VM. It is a VM.
That is correct. You cannot run the phone emulator in a right. VM. Another challenge to be overcome.
Yes.
All right, cool. Well, we were talking about doing iOS here. So we've started up our build agent. Mm-hmm. The next step is that we have to tell Visual Studio where to look for that build agent.
Okay.
And it so happens that I'm connected to the wireless network here. I just changed buildings, and so my IP address has changed. So let's just go ahead. Usually, if you're on a networked machine, you'll only do this once when you initially set up.
Right.
But it's helpful for other people to see how it's done. So I'm just going to go here. Open up my network preferences inside of my Apple OS, and it's going to tell me I'm on 10.82.119.43.
Okay.
So now I've just got to go tell Visual Studio, hey bud, go talk to 10.82.119.43, and that's where you want to send your build to. All right. So I'm going to go to Tools, Options. Underneath there, I've got my node here for multi-device hybrid apps. And you'll see that I was previously connected to 10.82.32.58.
Yep.
So I was just going to change that here. 119, do you remember what it was?
Nope.
That's all right.
That's why I would have copied and pasted.
You didn't pass the test. 119.43.
That's right. What copy and paste is for.
That's right. Okay. You're pretty much always, by default, listening on port 3000. So at this point, we should be ready to go. It knows where to send the build. It knows where to send the build.
Mm-hmm.
Over on the Mac side of things, we're listening for the build. Let's do it. Up here, I'm going to change it. I don't want to send it to an Android device anymore. I want to send it to an iOS device.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, sure. Actually, not Ripple. We want to send it to the simulator. Let's just send it to the iPhone simulator, right? Now, go gadget build. All right, it's sending it out. And let's go over here and peek on the iOS side of things. Look at that.
It's
you
moving.
Can see
yeah.
it's thinking about it. And here comes our iOS simulator.
Which runs on the Mac.
Which runs on the Mac.
Yep.
And there we go. It is god-awful red.
Oh, nice.
And here is your iOS application, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then in the meantime, let's actually, you know what? Just so we can make sure that our merges folder is working exactly how we think it should,
yep.
let's go to a device this time, right? Rather than deploy to iOS, I happen to have an Android Nexus 7 sitting
okay.
here right by me. Let's build to an Android device.
Cool.
All right. So I'm going to come back over here. Notice that we were in debug, and because we have not yet implemented debug for iOS, no debug on iOS just
okay.
yet.
It's coming.
Coming in the not so distant future. All right, cool. So we're going to kind of minimize this guy down for the time being. And This time, let's go to Android. Okay. We're gonna go to an Android device.
So does that show up because you have a device hooked up, or do you set device and then it looks for a device?
I literally, all that I did was just plug the device in.
Okay.
Actually, this does bring up a good point. For those of you out there trying Android device debugging, right, with a tethered device, tethered via USB, mm-hmm. one important point that a lot of people overlook is that just because you've got the device plugged in doesn't mean that your development environment has the right drivers to speak to that device.
Okay.
So always, always, always remember, if your device isn't recognized by your machine, go out and check for the drivers. It usually just takes a quick Bing or Google search to say, hey, Android Nexus 7 drivers. You'll find it within the top five or so results, and make sure you install those drivers. Mm-hmm. In this case, I've installed the drivers, I just connected the device. I'm gonna turn the device on. It may actually come up without it, but I wanna make sure it's unlocked so it actually comes up here. All right, got that there. So this time, it should not say your iOS application is ready. It should just say your application is ready.
Yep.
And here, I don't know, let's make it a background of green. Style equals background. Actually, you know what? I'm in a pink kind of mood today.
Right.
We're gonna make it pink. Oh, pink is too much like red. How about just black?
Well, if we had done this yesterday like we originally thought we were going to, everything would have been pink.
That's right, everything would have been pink. Yeah, we had a little HDMI cable issue, but that's all right. Okay,
all right.
So we're gonna go, background's gonna be black, and we're going to an Android device. All right, hit play, build started up. I'm gonna hold this up so the folks watching from home or office can see. It's gonna take a second for it to kinda get going here. The build process is still going. All right, is it waking up? Wake up, little guy.
Installing device, launching application.
Gotta unlock it again. Oh, actually, it is launched, but because I made the background black, it just looks like a dead device.
Because the text is black.
Because the text is black.
Excellent.
Well, that was a really poor choice of colors. Okay, let's try a different color just so we can prove that we got it done. All right, well, come back here. Should have gone with my first choice of pink. All right. Save again. Play that guy. All right, we're gonna hold this guy up again. Close this guy down. Oh, you see it coming up. There's our start screen.
That's good.
Yeah, there we go. Yay.
Fantastic.
Now, also it says, hello, your application is ready, not hello, your iOS application mm-hmm. is ready. All right, so.
Cool.
Notice here, back here in Visual Studio, we did a debug kind of build. And there we are. Actually, here we've got debug going on. In fact, I can come in here. I can change text here. Let's make this hello, Ryan. Hello, Ryan. Your application is ready. And for those of you at home, proof here. Hello, Ryan. Your application is ready. Updated right on the device.
Nice.
And so we've got basically a WebSocket connection going on.
So is that based on the browser link technology, or is that something
it
different?
It is based upon the technology that browser link is based on.
Okay.
Thing,
all
right? So the fundamental underpinning piece of it is WebSockets that just provides a communication channel between
cool.
the two. So it is not shared code base with browser link, but we're using the same tricks.
Same plumbing.
Yeah, totally.
Excellent.
Totally. All right.
Cool.
Cool. So here we are. We've gone through debugging on a Ripple. We've gone through launching to iOS. Mm-hmm. We have launched to an Android device. Of course, I won't take you through it, but we've seen it 1,000 times. You know that you can deploy to a Windows emulator. Mm-hmm. You know that you can debug on that. And all of this just using kind of like HTML and JavaScript. Like if you've got a team, if you yourself are a kind of a web developer, or you are comfortable inside of web technologies, and it's great. Even if you're not a web developer, the community around it is just, it's so strong.
And when we say JavaScript, do you mean any framework you want?
Yeah, like any framework you want. In fact, one of the things that that we did when kind of conjunction with the WinJS team in this kind of last summer update 3 or mm-hmm. kind of around the same time frame was we built a shim. At the time, we were calling it the Safe HTML Polyfill. I think we actually had a different name for it in the end. But basically, what that does is that allows you, let's say that your favorite framework is one of those frameworks that happens to use inner HTML, okay. or it happens to use the eval statement to kind of write things out. And a lot of frameworks out there do, like AngularJS. Mm-hmm. And so we introduced a shim that would allow you to still continue to use AngularJS, and it already worked deployed to iOS, it already worked deployed to Android, and now you can use that on Windows Store and Windows Phone applications as well with that shim. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, look at this, in Windows 8, by default, platform overrides. Okay. WinStore.js compat, that's it right there, oops, that's it right there. Mm-hmm. WinStore.js compat, so that is what allows you to safely, easily take your favorite framework with you and have it easily work on on Windows Store as well. So you know, we kind of in our own development, and my own development, I've built apps using Backbone, Bootstrap, Angular. I'm really excited to try out Famous, which is essentially kind of like a graphics engine and does a lot of OpenGL work. And React is another one that I'm really excited to try out, but I haven't tried out yet.
Right.
But like, if it works on the interwebs, there's a darn good chance that it's going to work here. So take it with you. Like, if you've got existing assets, if you've got your favorite framework, take it with you. That's what's going to get you to market faster.
Cool. Very cool.
I had if you've got time, I had one last thing that I thought I could show you. All right, sweet. So we talked earlier about using device capabilities.
Yes.
So let's actually kind of do a quick how-to for device capabilities. Kind of going with the theme of camera, because camera is nice and demonstrative, I thought we'd do a camera example.
Cool.
All right, let's do it.
Excellent.
So I happen to have just a little HTML snippet that I created earlier. Here's my HTML example.txt. All right, and I'm just going to do a little airlift, but we'll walk through some of the code, and so we better understand what's going on. All right, so we're just going to kind of keep on operating inside of index.html. Let's stop debugging. All right, Control A, do Control V. All right, so I know that I just airlifted this. Let's walk through it and make sure we understand it. All right, so from the top down, okay. It's an HTML document with a bunch of inline JavaScript just to make our jobs easy. Cordova.js, right? Cordova.js is like, that's what kind of provides the hook into the Cordova platform itself, right? This is just a necessity to build, right? Platform overrides, okay, predictably, this is what's going to provide overrides, special case scenarios for each one of the iOS.
So you have that only in the Windows 8?
Only in the Windows 8, I believe. Let's see. So I think in scripts, by default, we might have a couple in here. We can actually take a look in here. Yeah, it's just a blank file
in scripts. Okay, so everybody gets that.
Everybody gets it, but only Windows 8.
Specific ones for Windows 8.
So Windows 8, we're doing some extra special stuff because we knew that there were a lot of developers out there who wanted to be able to use, for example, AngularJS, and they wanted to be able to take that with them to Windows.
Okay. Got it.
And since Windows had some minor incompatibilities with Angular, we provided a small shim so that it's not exclusive to Angular, I'm just using it as an example. But we provided a small shim that kind of made it possible to, without making any changes to your code, just continue to use Angular the way you always would, right?
Okay.
So we tried to be as lightweight as we possibly could in our JavaScript, in our project structure, in part because like when you go out there and talk to people, what frameworks they're using and kind of what the common practices are, one of the great blessings and great curses or liabilities of kind of the web space at large is there's so much diversity.
Right.
And with that much diversity, sometimes it can hurt to be prescriptive and to say, this is how you should do it.
Right.
No, let people, you know, take what they've got with them. And we want to provide as many samples and as much, helpful guidance as possible to give people kind of a good picture of what like best practices look like without having to be kind of onerous about our instruction. Mm-hmm. And so we were pretty lightweight about our templates. Okay. Okay, and so let's kind of head back on over here to index. Keep on walking through that. Scripts, index is actually pretty lightweight right now. There's basically doing some onload kind of thing, just your basic events to show you application lifecycle mm-hmm. kind of stuff. All right, keep on going down it. So on device ready, in this case, because I wanted the whole thing to be self-contained, for an easy example, I just put it all in line here. On device ready, here we are. We're just kind of creating some shortcuts for ourselves so that we don't have to type out navigator.camera okay. blah, every time. Right? When we get success, so this is all calls for device capabilities are pretty much always going to be asynchronous. Right, so you're looking for a callback in order to handle it in the JavaScript application because you have to negotiate that barrier between web view, where all of your kind of your views live and your logic lives, mm-hmm. and native device capabilities, which are kind of outside of the web view, and your plugin is negotiating the communication between the two. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, awesome. So in this particular case, what do we do when there's a success? Hey, it's going to hand us back essentially like a bit stream with some image data. And we're actually going to we've got a little spot on our page later on, you'll see, where we're going to put a little thumbnail of that image. And then here we are. We're actually just feeding it that bit stream right there in the image source. Okay. Let's see here. If we've actually got an image that it's delivered back, we are going to kind of give it by a URI as opposed to a bitstream. Mm-hmm. This is where we actually capture the photo, right? And so later on down the road where we've got a button, that this button will call the capture photo.
So is navigator.camera provided by the plugin, and this plugin
yes.
calls get picture.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
You got it. You got it.
Right.
Totally.
Okay.
Yeah.
And presumably different plugins would have different parameters to that get picture potentially, although
yeah.
you'd think it would standardize pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, you would
and
think
the underlying APIs aren't that different on how a camera works on a device.
They are
think
not.
The plugins would be pretty standard, right?
So it'll be a single plugin that you use for across all of the different platforms.
Right.
So it's the job of the camera plugin to say, no matter how different iOS looks versus Android looks versus Windows looks, just provide this common API
right.
across all of them.
Okay.
Now, having said that, I, as an independent developer, could decide that the camera plugin that is maintained by the community
mm-hmm.
Isn't good enough.
Yeah, you could write ryannavigator.iOSCamera and Android camera and WinPhone camera and Win8 camera if you wanted to and needed to.
Absolutely.
And then people could choose to use that
yep.
if it made sense.
Yep, and then at that point it would just be my job as a good developer to provide
right.
documentation for it. Luckily, the 20 or so odd common plugins that are out there are super well documented,
mm-hmm.
maintained by a healthy and vibrant community
okay.
That... for that matter, includes Microsoft, also includes folks from Google and Adobe and like all of like the big contributors out there, as along with some just like really well-meaning and kind of ambitious and eager independent developers who
okay.
are out there. Right?
Cool.
Okay, so get photo. Let's see here. This is. Oh yeah, right. This is just like if you've got a photo that's on the actual device. Hey, just give me the location of that photo
okay.
and put it on here. And then we're actually down to the actual basic UI, and you'll see this is a really super simple,
sure.
stripped down little example. But I think it works well for demonstrating how a JavaScript application installed on a local device
mm-hmm.
can access those native device capabilities.
Right.
So let's actually do it. In this particular case, I'm going to go to my Android machine
okay.
again. I'm going to go to my Nexus 7. All right. So we're going to go ahead. go gadget build. I'm one day going to get sued by Hasbro or whoever it was that came up with Inspector Gadget for using his catchphrase. Let's turn this guy on, unlock it. Oh, hey, it already came up.
Crowdsource your defense fund.
Thank you. Okay, so from here you'll see we've got the four buttons, mm-hmm. small ones in the top corner, and I'm going to say capture photo because okay. I want to use the actual photo here. All right, capture photo. All Ooh. Right. Oh, exception thrown.
Kaboom.
Kaboom. Say okay. Let's do continue here. See if it lets me through it. Oh, you know what? Oh, I'm so glad we ran into this error. This is an awesome error to run into.
You don't hear it that often. Thank God I hit this. How fun.
Thank God for the debugging features in Visual Studio. This is super cool. So I'm just going to say okay. You know why it's doing that? Oh, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. It is doing that because I never told the application that I want access to the camera. I actually have to say, you know, hey, dude, like okay. as a security, as kind of agreement, as a contract with the device, I want access to the camera.
Capabilities in Windows 8 and Windows Phone, you got to do the same thing on other devices.
It is doing exactly
nice.
What it should do.
Okay.
So let's do that. Let's actually open up the config designer to let it know, hey, man, I want access to the camera.
So it doesn't prompt. Right. So in Windows 8, you have to ask for it first. Otherwise, you can't code to it. And then once you've asked for it in the app, then the device will ask you, is it okay for this app to
yes.
use your camera?
And it's the exact same
exact
case
same
here.
Process.
It's
okay.
the exact same process here, right? So we're going to go over to config.xml, mm-hmm. Which is the Cordova moral equivalent to the manifest designer
right.
for a Windows 8 application,
yep.
right? And so here we are. In this particular case, I want to go to plugins mm-hmm. tab. And in here, I'll say, hey, buddy.
There it is.
Give me access to the camera. Let's see here. I think we also, in this case, might want access to the file system,
mm-hmm.
just because once we get that image, we want to be able to, like, you know, put it there on the right. On the thing, right? So we're going to say those two. All right. Save. Now let's go to the device again. I'm going to wake it up before I actually start it. Okay. And let's actually close that app here. All right. So now we're back to the home screen. All right, doing our build. All right, here it is coming up. There's our fancy schmancy welcome screen. And let's do it here. We're going to say capture photo. Look at that.
Excellent.
Here it is. All right, we're going to take a... Here we go. Here you go, dude. Whoa!
Paparazzi. All the time.
All right, here we are. All right, we're going to say check. Yeah, that looks good. That's exactly what we expected. And there we are. There's
Excellent.
Our little thumbnail down at the bottom.
Cool.
So that is how you kind of, using a simple camera kind of example, will
yeah.
take advantage of native device capabilities. And,
nice.
And we got to see the config designer as part of it.
Yay.
Brilliant. Cool, man. Well, thanks for letting me
that's
share
cool.
that with you.
That's excellent.
Absolutely.
So this is a great way to do cross-platform, multi-device development. If you know HTML and JavaScript, as you had said earlier, there's some great tools that have been out there before. We happen to think we have a great IDE.
Yeah.
And so now you can do this inside Visual Studio.
Yeah, totally.
And take along all of your HTML, CSS, and JavaScript code and skills with you and just reuse them.
Yeah, I would add for anyone listening at home or in the office, you know, we really are in CTP, we're in early mm-hmm. releases, and so your feedback is essential. Like, we want to know what features people want, where people are having problems. So please send us an email at multidevicehybridapp@microsoft.com.
Okay, that's the best place to get in touch.
You'll get
with
the
you
product team. Yeah, like all the product team is, well, not all, but the there are people on the product team
okay.
Listening to that email address on a daily basis, and we're also really active on Stack Overflow. If you go to Stack Overflow and just search for multi-device hybrid app again, you'll find a whole host of questions. Right now, I'm really, really proud of this. Our team is averaging a response time of less than 8 hours for any question that comes to us on Stack Overflow. And so, you know, we're really using that as our way of helping educate the community, and not just Microsoft developers, but anyone who's interested in it, and kind of, quite frankly, as a way of learning what features people are most interested in. You have the opportunity to shape this product, and so tell us what you want, tell us what you need.
So it's an extension, you can get it from the Visual Studio Gallery. Does it require Update 3?
Yes, sir, it does. So it requires Update 3. It does require versions of Pro Plus, so anything Pro or better. And let's see here, any other requirements? Windows 7 or Windows 8 or 8.1. And and you know, to build for a Mac, you do need a Mac.
Cool. All right. Thanks for coming on the show, Mr.
Absolutely. That's awesome. It's been a really fun time.
Cool. All right. Hope you enjoyed that, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.